Bill Simmons hosts the most downloaded sports podcast of all time, with a rotating crew of celebrities, athletes, media staples, and a slew of other friends and family members who always happen to be available. Check out the Bill Simmons podcast on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Moose, are you frozen?
No, I'm here. I'm just chilling. I'm just zen. Okay. I'm just very zen.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Writers House on Ringer FC. I hope you're all safe and well. We are recording this on Tuesday, so the Stadio boys will cover the Champions League on Thursday's episode. Today, we're going to talk about Mo Salah and Viv Miedema joining the 100 Club, plus a little bit about a record of my own. And my guests are Mr. Moussa Kwanga and Carl Anker from The Athletic. How are you doing, fellas? What's happening?
Very well, indeed. I'm good.
Everybody on good form? Carl, you on good form?
Yeah, I'm feeling all right. Champions League is back.
Mm-hmm.
It's moving into turtleneck weather, so I'm powering up.
Feeling good. What's it called? Manchester. Can we just quickly out excited? And I was jealous of Manchester. I was jealous. You know, because you know something? It was, if there's any player that I know is going to score, he was going to score. It's like when Thierry came back and it was just against Leeds in the FA Cup, and it was like, you know what I mean? He scored the goal because everybody wanted him to score the goal. And how happy the kids were.
Makes United a contender? You think that makes him a contender now?
Yeah, I do. Because Varane as well. Pogba is now, you know, like I always say about Pogba. Pogba, it can have 5 minutes spell in a game and the game is over.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like people forget that's what he's capable of doing, Carl. 5 minutes in the game, bam, they could score 3 goals. Him in that form, Ronaldo taking chances like that, Fernandes not being like upstaged, you know, Varane, we're now looking at a spine that can match anyone's.
It was a good weekend to be a Mancunian, I feel. So even though the Test cricket match got cancelled, you had Park Life, you had Ronaldo's homecoming. There was just a bunch of people, but the town was just really, there was just so much energy and people were buzzing. People were just really, I mean, Manchester's always a friendly city, but the atmosphere around town on the Saturday was something else. Mm. And I mean, I'm really happy for Paul Pogba. I think 7 assists already. And I know this never happens. We talk about this every time a player gets 5 or 6 assists really early on where you're going, ooh, is this the time where Thierry Henry's record gets broken? But no. We'll see. I want to see him try and break that record. I don't think it will ever be broken. Also, I need to look back and see how enough Henry did that because that guy was different gravy.
Yeah.
Mm. Talk about Henry and wingers and, you know, wingers, legendary wingers, because we could put him down as a winger, can't we? Or we strike. He turned into an amazing striker, but started as a winger. We have to talk about Mo Salah and this extraordinary goal scorer. I remember when Mo Salah, when he went to Chelsea, I remember before he went to Roma, remember the time when Arsene Wenger was playing his 1,000th game against Chelsea, against Mourinho, and I was there and I was done all my build-up talking about, listen, if there's one game, you want the players to turn up and make sure that the manager against his nemesis, against his arch enemy, they turn up, Moose. They turn up, Carl, and put in a performance for the manager. They lost 6-0.
Horror.
6-0. Horror.
It was,
you know, they had Eden Hazard had his way with them. He had his way with them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Mo Salah, I think he scored the 6th goal. He came on. I think he ran from the halfway line all the way through there and finished it. When he finished it, I thought, wow, that was pretty cool. I know that you get in games, you get to that stage of the game where, you know, when it's just so easy, so you get those got back. But he took it. So easy. Thought to myself, wow, that's amazing. Then when he went to Roma, I thought, I'll see how he does in Roma. Bam, done it in Roma. He come to Liverpool that first season, 32 Premier League goals in 36. I'm thinking, my God, this guy's an hybrid of what he's doing. He's just like, he's a winger. He doesn't link play. He doesn't drop back. He doesn't like, He doesn't go back and do that helping defenders and that, guys. He is literally, he's just a goal scoring machine.
He was almost like, you know, like when Johnny Depp first came along, he like wouldn't do huge movies. He would just do little bits here and there and would like do like 20 minute cameos and be brilliant. And then like he'd disappear again.
Yes.
And Mo Salah was like that. Mo Salah came, he was at Basel and he'd score these like great late winners in the Champions League, but his strike wasn't actually that good. So he kind of just like pop up doing something amazing, disappear again. And so I got to say the level of consistency he's hit now.
Yeah.
Of all the strikers who've got this kind of goal scoring consistency, he is the one I least expected to suddenly get to suddenly explode. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Like, yes, because it does.
You don't like, look at the ones, even like, you know, Bamford. I mean, the only comparison we have is like even a Calvert-Lewin, right? But that's different because the range of goals that Salah is scoring now, Salah has just like, his form has exploded in a way that I can't remember any other forward exploding. No. That makes sense.
No.
He, go on, Carl. So,
you know, he leaves Chelsea, he goes to Florentina for a bit. He was okay at Florentina. He was at Roma for a bit. He was okay at Roma. And when he turned up at Liverpool, I mean, the signing was pretty muted.
Very underwhelming. It's like, they bought Salah. Oh, strange. Yeah, okay. You know, this was the vibe.
This was another sort of Chelsea flop. And people weren't, you know, Chelsea fans weren't kicking themselves that Liverpool bought this guy. Mm-mm. And then that 2008, 2017-18 season, he just ridiculous. And I think one thing that was great in that first season where he's scoring all those goals was Jurgen Klopp made a concerted effort to explain to Salah the hard work teammates were doing to get him to this position. So Klopp was going out of his way going, look, you are in really good form right now. And I just want you to do what you're doing, but understand that this is what Sadio Mane is doing to help you. This is what Roberto Firmino is doing to help you. This is what Jordan Henderson is doing to help you. And it was that really interesting, you know, the concept of how, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. Mm-hmm. It took Jurgen Klopp and some very talented individuals to make this phenomenal goal scorer. And it's just gone on and on and on. I remember the, if you remember, this was at Wembley Stadium, Tottenham Hotspur beat Liverpool 4-1. And it was maybe one of the last great performances of Poch's Tottenham Hotspur. Salah was the one that got the goal for Liverpool.
Was that the Lovren game? That was the Lovren game.
Salah scored a goal and it was a really scruffy finish. But it was one of those goals that if he'd struck the ball quite cleanly, Lloris probably would have saved it. Right. And this was at the time where everyone's going, who is this Salah guy? He keeps getting all these scruffy finishes. He's not hitting the ball cleanly. He's getting into fantastic goal scoring opportunities, but he's not always scoring. Mm-hmm. And it's just got better and better and better. And he's still doing the scruffy finishes.
Yeah.
He's also got the fantastic clean finishes. He's also got secretly one of the best penalty records I've seen from
It's wild. Yeah. Mm.
His penalty record is so good.
Do you know, there's a couple of things about Salah. The penalty thing is one thing I want to mention, but there's something about the finishing. He either takes it extremely early or extremely late.
Mm-hmm.
And that you have to do that. And what I mean is like his tell is very, for someone that scores so many goals, there's left, right? So you'd think, okay, well, it's pretty easy to work out what he's doing. But the genius that he has is his timing. It's very often he cuts in off the left flank and you're like, there's only one way he's going to go with this, right? Because there's not many angles. But the delay, he either hits it really early or he delays. There's one he gets against De Gea when he comes in off the inside right position and like he's still on goal. You're like, there's no angle for him. And he just goes over De Gea at the very last minute. And I'm like, this is the thing. He knows that he has one favorite trick, which is the left foot finish, but then he knows that you don't know when he's going to reveal it or release it. That to me is like so fascinating. And the same with his penalties as well. Like his disguise is something that Miedema's got as well. Miedema and actually Ian yourself, like the disguise on his finish is just otherworldly.
You know, it's when you look, you have to mention Thierry because Thierry, he started as a winger and it's, you know, and we saw what he turned into. He could play anywhere in there. He could do Firmino, he could do Salah, he could do Mane, he could do any of those, but he kind of turned into a centre forward where he could link play. He would come from the left and score goals. But Salah doesn't, I don't see him ever down the middle. I don't see him ever do, you know where you say, yeah, but the wings, you have to be able to, if you go in there, you have to be able to do that link play. I don't see him do any of that stuff. He's playing a role in the team. Well, I think to myself, if I was playing in a team now, I'd want that role because there's no other responsibility.
It's like with Cristiano Ronaldo in the first time at United with Tevez and Rooney. It's a similar dynamic.
That role, what you get, you get that role.
Two sacrificial strikers playing for you. That's wild.
Sometimes you know when you watch him miss the chances. And he misses some chances where you think, what? It's a surprise. Because you think, wow, how's he missed that chance? If Mo Salah gets another season like he did in his first season where he just, everything he touched, he went in. I think he's got another couple of those seasons in him where he's going to go again, where he just goes on this fucking lava. Like form. Lava form. And if Liverpool, this again with Liverpool, if Liverpool can stay fit, because people are talking, I saw some people arguing on Twitter, something like Gary Neville said about Liverpool. There's something not quite right with them. And then people are talking about their bench and who they've got. And yes, they have got enough cover in that. If Liverpool stay fit, Liverpool are very much amongst it. They are very much amongst it. If he can hit that form again, even if he doesn't.
I don't see the missing piece. I'm sorry, I don't see this whole Liverpool got something missing. I don't see it.
People are saying depth.
Curtis Jones. Then Harvey Elliott came out of nowhere and he was incredible. Naby Keita started this. You know, I think this, you know this, can I be honest with you? I think it's wishful thinking.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's wishful. Of course it is. Look, I hate to say it, but like ex-players can't help themselves. I know they're great pundits, but like they can't help themselves. And you want to see there's a gap in the armour, but there's not a gap in the armour. Liverpool are just brilliant and whoever wins will have to be at their best to beat them.
It's almost as if, Musa, they are hope. Because what we saw with Liverpool when Liverpool got the injuries last, if you look at the injuries that Liverpool, it was to everybody that they needed. It's uncanny. Because at the start of the season, you say, well, you don't want them to get an injury for Salah or Van Dijk or Henderson or Gomez or Fabinho, and all of them, Matty, everybody, Trent Alexander, everybody who they need got injured. What's the odds on that happening again? Because if it doesn't, I still feel that Liverpool, although I've said Chelsea, I still feel that Liverpool are going to be one or two.
Of course they are. Absolutely.
The good thing about Liverpool, to be a Liverpool fan, I think, is everything that possibly could have gone wrong last season went wrong.
Right. Yeah.
And they still finished third. Right?
Wow.
So my hesitancy to give them title challenges was the fact that just because everything went wrong last season doesn't mean everything's going to go right this season. You know, I still think there are some, you know, it's not all going to click at the same time yet. But that said, they should be a shoe-in for third place at the very least.
You think third?
They're my top two. To me, it's Chelsea and Liverpool. There's something about City this year. I actually worry they've got incredible strength in some areas and certain weaknesses in others. They made very, very... I know they had that stacked bench against Leicester, but they made very...
Where do you think they're weak, though, Moose? Where do you think they're weak? Because I can't see the weakness.
I wonder if they have firepower in the very biggest games.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the very biggest games, I wonder if they have firepower. I'll say that. I'm not sure they do, actually.
Yeah.
And I don't think, when I say the very biggest games, I mean like the quarterfinals of the Champions League onwards or the kind of absolute like top four clashes. I'm talking about those.
Yeah.
Salah's finish against Leeds.
It was beautiful.
He loves the close race finish. Like he really enjoys. Yeah. That's the thing. I think the thing about this, you talk about the scrappy, Carl. He loves it though. He loves the scrappy. Yes. There's one he scores. My favorite Mo Salah tapping. There's one, I can't remember the team he does it against. The ball is coming towards him and he's like wide of the goal and the goal's behind him and he just like slashes it with the outside of his left foot and like also backspins into the corner. You know, when Henry scores that street ball finish in the, there's a street ball finish that Henry scores on the Nike adverts where he hits it with a bit of spin and it spins off his foot and like curves back in. Salah loves finishing from like 4 yards.
Yeah.
Like he absolutely, it's like his, and you know, we saw against Leeds, he absolutely doesn't feel diminished or demeaned by that kind of goal. Does that make sense, Carl? And like,
yep, he very much is the they all count.
They all count. Yeah, yeah.
You know, you get to a because, like I say, they're wingers. Like I with Thierry. Once Thierry started to really get the taste, it's like I remember Arsene Wenger said he wants to bring him to Arsenal and he wants to turn him into a striker. And Thierry said, "I don't score goals." I remember he said that. It was honestly, it's amazing. He said, "I don't score goals." Arsene Wenger said, "Don't worry, you'll be okay." Once he started scoring goals, then you see the bit where he's scoring the goals where it is tap-ins. When Thierry in that scores tap-ins, it's beautiful because that's not how he normally scores. So when you see a player of Thierry's caliber just in there, just tapping it in there, just it's a thing of beauty.
But it means you've mastered the entire craft, doesn't it?
Exactly.
The entire craft.
Exactly what it means. And this is what When, like, even when Mo just opened himself up, bam, just went in. And just, I think Mane was just behind him. I think he's even offside, I think.
If he
would have been offside. But it's the way that, when he put that ball in, it was just like, bam, bam. It was just so clean. And just
do you remember,
like,
the summer that, the summer that Henri and Messi, like, both learned how to do free kicks? They just came back from the summer and they both, do you remember that? They both, because before Henri's free kicks, the keeper would catch them. Oh, that's lovely. It was like really sweet. It was like when you, the first time you see like a lion cub. And it's roaring as it goes, rah, rah. And you're like, rah. And then, like, and then 3 summers later, the lion actually roars.
It roars.
Like,
problem when it roars, God. And you go, oh my God, that's the roar.
And that's the roar. The whole forest, even the grass is scared. Like, you know.
Yes.
But like Henri was the same thing.
You know, just quickly, because I have to mention Mane. Mane was having one of those games against Leeds where I was saying, you know what? I pray to God he scores in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he doesn't score in that game, because he's one of the only players I've seen that was so honest about, remember Kelly Cates was saying it to me, I love Kelly Cates, big up Kelly Cates. Kelly Cates was saying to me when he came out and said, I don't know what's wrong with me.
Mm.
You remember? Okay. Because don't say those things. I don't know what's wrong with me. What's going on? I don't know what's wrong with me. He had the kind of game where you have those games as a striker where the goalkeeper saves everything that you do.
Yes.
Or you miss.
He got 10 shots. And that's
10 shots.
10 shots against Leeds, which is he by himself outshot Leeds. That was a guy trying harder and harder to score. And he moved to the middle. Hard. And the thing is, his movement from the centre, just trying to bamboozle Leeds' central defence, open up space for other people. So it was one of those games where, even if he hadn't scored, it was a net positive for the team. But I had the same feeling that when he got the goal, like, that'll do him really, really good. And, and I think he'll probably have a little run now where he just feels a lot calmer.
The only reason, the one good thing is we can say is that at least he's not Manchester City, because we know that he'd be getting lots of praise. Then there'd be tears 3 months later. If
he'd be gone. Pep, move him on.
We cannot replace him.
Sadly,
exactly. We can't replay. What do we do? And cry.
Just
crocodile
on Salah.
Tears.
Just very quickly on Salah, I just want to say, like, so he's the fifth fastest to reach 100 Premier League goals, 160 games, which is mind-blowingly quick. And just of that, you look at that five, you know, obviously Shearer's in there too, and Aguero too. Like, you look at that five.
Out-and-out strikers.
Yeah, he's the one of them.
Maybe Thierry.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I got to say, not since Thierry Henry have I seen a player just glow up like that. And I think it's I think it's very inspiring to other strikers, I think, who maybe think, I've got everything else in my game, but not the final piece. But maybe you're just meeting one elite manager away from becoming a world-class finisher.
Yes. Well, that's what we've seen with Mo Salah, but I still feel that to have the kind of responsibilities, with, in fact, the no responsibilities for anything other than go and score, that you're going into a game with a totally different mindset. Yep. Your mindset is totally different because the chances are just going to continue coming. You haven't got the responsibility of going back. You haven't got the responsibility of linking play. Sometimes if he finds himself in the middle, it's because someone's about to cross it or something. He's not, bam, layoff, because he's looking to score. He's got an unbelievable role in that team. And this is why I feel that Mo Salah, at some stage, whether it's this season, is going to have another one of those can't stop scoring seasons.
Yeah.
From one great goal scorer, we've got to say from Mo Salah, we have to go to the WSL women's game. And the one and only Dame Vivian Miedema.
Right.
My God. 102 goals. Man, 102 goals.
Well, this is the thing. And again, we were saying before, the legendary disguise on the finishing.
Jeez,
you cannot, you know, just before Miedema shoots, you cannot tell. Actually, it's funny because you tweeted this. I was going to point it out in the chat, but you beat me to it on Twitter. You actually were, the other day when Miedema went through on goal against Chelsea, the body swerve that Miedema puts. Do you remember when Baggio went through in the Czech Republic? You know, in the World Cup.
Yes, that little body swerve, and then he put it back there when he fell
still,
over.
That person was still looking for him. That defender was still. Baggio throws a swerve, and the defender looks over the left shoulder than the right, and Baggio's gone, right?
Mm.
And you have to watch it 3 times to find out what's happened. It was the same with them. I had to rewatch the Miedema goal against Chelsea 3 times to fully process what the body movement had been.
You know, the thing with that, the body movement, Moose, is that the defenders will probably know that they want to go back there. They literally they can't do anything about what's about to happen to them.
They can't.
You can't do anything about it.
But the problem as well, the problem is that Miedema takes the, sorry, Carl, this is really, I'll get this out. I was watching Miedema's finish because, you know, the left foot and the right foot, they're roughly equal in terms of the amount of goals she's got with each.
Absolutely absurd.
Right. But this is the thing, Carl, this is the thing. I was like, okay, well, maybe she just uses the right for power and the left for placement. No, it's not. She scores one goal. She takes a left-footed half volley. The ball comes in from like the left wing from 30 yards out and it's like 8 yards out and she takes it perfectly on the half volley just as the ball drops with the left.
Mm.
Soft touch, mm-hmm. like a paintbrush inside the left corner.
Moose, she's got 50 with her... So for somebody who's right-footed,
yeah,
right? She's got 50 with her right foot, 41 with her left. You know, it's just like...
Yeah,
you normally, that would normally be a lot less with the left. It would be half of that. She must forget what foot she scored with. She must forget if it's that close. 11 with her head. Amazing.
A different dimension.
Yeah. And her mindset as well, Carl. Her mindset is not the mindset of, you see, like how goal scorers are hungry and, oh, she's selfish and, you know what I mean? I have to score. And she's not that killer. She actually is genuinely not about, I don't care, I'm going to score at all costs. It's me. You know, because the assists she's got as well. And she genuinely does not care about scoring. Maybe that's something. She scores, you know, because that's what she... I don't know what it is, Moose.
It's like those surgeons that basically do like field theatre, but also in the fancy hospitals. They don't care where they're operating. They're just doing surgery. They don't care.
They're just going in, yes.
Just give me my scrubs and I'll do it in the countryside. Yep. I'll do it in the fancy place. Yeah. I'm in clinic and it's very, you could, you know, like a lab coat. She's got like a lab. You saw her energy is like, you know, even the celebrations.
She's even so the celebrations muted. Like,
okay. Oh, that's a stoppage in play. Okay, that's a stoppage. And it's like, everyone's going, oh, celebration. Okay, that's a stoppage. Back to the halfway line. It's like,
can I say something? Yeah. As well, Moose, I don't know if it's the Dutch thing or the great Dutch player I play with, Dennis Bergkamp, but Dennis has got the same kind of persona in how cold and calm he is about scoring and doing amazing things. He's very matter of fact. Yeah, well, that's what I do. And that's what I work hard to do. And that's what comes out. That's what you'll see.
There's rigor in the performance of ease.
Yeah.
Mm. And she has mastered that. There is something really interesting when you watch someone who is a master of their craft and they've mastered something that is hard for everyone else.
Right.
And then they treat it with, I don't want to say disdain, but they treat it with a certain, I do this because it is interesting to me personally, not necessarily because.
You know what she said? She said on, she said, it's just another record or milestone. Milestone's there to be broken. And that's the way I've always been. I've always treated records and landmarks as something to hit, be done with it, then move on.
Yep.
That's freezing cold.
It's like one of those little tokens you've got on the front of your desk at work. Like, what's that? Oh, that's just a photograph from when I went on holiday. Whereas to someone else, they go, that's, you've got like one of the seven wonders of the world. Ah, well, yeah, no, I've got another one. Thing. It's fine.
It's the joy. It's what you're saying, Carl. She takes so much joy in the work itself. Like, yes. She clearly is just someone who absolutely loves. There's a novelist called, I think, Percival Everett. No social media, nothing. Like, and just writes incredible novels and never does any interviews, nothing, no flash, nothing. And Miedema's like that, just does the work, right? And even not getting like awards, nominated for this, it's like, oh, you're not on the. And she's kind of almost, when she gets interviewed about that stuff, she's almost irritated that people see so much validation in those things, right?
Yeah.
It's about the work. Like,
yeah.
And was it the 10-0 against, was it Bristol? Two seasons ago it was. And it was just the accumulation, not to humiliate the opposition, but because I'm in great form, I'll carry on being great form until the whistle goes. That's it.
It's the, Senna had this fantastic quote where he said, the problem he always has was what he always wants to achieve his best, but the moment he begins a task and he realizes how far he can go, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And then you eventually get to a point where you don't know when you should stop. And you can see that with Viv in that game. It wasn't, the intensity was not to humiliate the opponent, but the intensity was, well, I'm in a good run of form. How many can I get in this game?
Yes.
Exactly. How many assists can I get in this game? And it's, again, it's a very intrinsic case of almost personal discovery and interest. It's not necessarily about outside accolades. It's not necessarily about the respect of other people, but it's about
there's a science.
I'm interested in how many goals I can score.
It's almost like a scientific experiment.
Yeah.
I watch a lot of, I mean, I watch a lot of football podcasts, so basketball podcasts, you know, on YouTube. And Kevin Durant fascinates me in basketball. I think he's the closest analogy, I would say, in a different sport to someone like Miedemar, where you can be, someone said it best, good defense doesn't stop Kevin Durant, right?
Yep.
You can be playing amazingly against Durant and still Durant will get his points. I think Miedemar's like that. Miedemar on her game, you can defend really well and you just can't stop certain things. You know what I mean? Like, she'll do a certain thing where you're like, there's one goal she scores, she's so patient. She receives the ball and there's like three defenders scrambling across the line and she just, it's like watching someone like fillet a fish. She moves left, moves right, goalkeeper shifts, moves right again, keepers, defender on the line, slots it. And it's like, it's just dismantling. And it's almost like you don't have a say in it at that point. Like, yeah, you're the opposition, you're trying, but you don't have a say in the outcome.
I saw some very interesting games this weekend, just quickly on the WSL. I started watching the Man City Tottenham game. And when it started, I thought, wow, this is going to be really embarrassing for Spurs. This is going to be embarrassing because Man City was so dominant. They created so many chances.
Yeah.
And when they scored, I thought, right, here we go. But then for some reason, they couldn't keep it going. You know, Tottenham, especially when Tottenham makes a couple of changes. And what the point I'm making is that whatever anyone's, you are never out of a game. I don't care who you're playing against, right? No matter how bad it's looking, Tottenham's left back, Ashley Neville, I love the way she played. And she just stepped her game up and up and up, just kept going. And in the end, Tottenham got themselves back in it. They still missed chances.
Right.
The goal, what they won with, come on, man. You know, they got to sort something out. As good as Man City are, and they came out and they said, listen, it's not good enough from us. I think it was Laura Hemper came out and said, not good enough. We've got to finish these teams off. We've got to do this. But the fact is, they're not supposed to have lost that game because that goal should not have been given. You know what I mean? But at the same time, I feel that Man City, yes, should have been more ruthless, but that's because they had how many players missing? Between Kira Walsh, Lucy Bronze. The amount of players that
Weir was out as well. I've got to say this as well. I looked at the lineup and thought, you know, they got Lasada in there, but they haven't integrated a new signing that well. It takes a while to bed in new players. And I just felt, even for all the chance creation, the team was very uneven. You know, that's the thing. And an uneven team gives you a chance. And let's not forget, even when Spurs first came up, the defining characteristic of Spurs actually was their first game against, I think it was Chelsea. Chelsea beat them 1-0, I think, in the first game back. And they were
Yeah,
they were so resilient. They were so hard to break down.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it was like, if you're off your game against Spurs, they're in with a chance.
They were very dogged.
The thing about City have to be worried about, they've done this twice now, two seasons running, like slightly iffy starts the season, and then they're playing catch up.
Mm-hmm.
They did this last time. They got a bad draw early on and it really hurt them because then they were just chasing Chelsea the whole way. And now Chelsea, of course, are chasing too. And I just wonder if they're going to have that anxiety of, because Arsenal have come out aggressively with this. Arsenal, they're going in. So we'll see.
Chelsea as well. Chelsea are going to be good. You know, the other day you looked at
that win over Everton.
That win over Everton. And obviously some of the mistakes were rightly punished, but they, you know, I'm looking at Emma Hayes and I was speaking to Emma Hayes the other day. She is on a mission.
Yeah.
She's on a mission. She wants to right that wrong, especially the Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants to make sure that everything's right with what she's doing in the WSL. I think Chelsea are going to be very hard to stop again. But like, I think that team for me is going back. They're going back there, Chelsea. They look ruthless.
I think in the Premier League, I mean, one thing I'll say about Everton, if it's any consolation to Everton, it's that people are playing them with like immense respect. I think they caught people a bit cold last year in the first part of the season. But this time everyone's coming out. You have to fly out the traps against them because they're so good. They're so resilient at pressing. They'll wear you down and they'll score late.
Yeah, so I think you've got to get out. It's when they don't.
You've got to jump out on them early. That's what I think Chelsea have learned.
Well, I think whatever and have to do, Moose, sorry, just quickly. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Is that they have to find that consistency because that's their strength.
Yeah, yeah.
It was too easy. Once they, it's almost like they didn't do their main thing, which is press, put them under pressure and get the goals. And then once that doesn't happen, Moose, bam, yeah. It's just like, whoa, we're open. And if you're going to be like Chelsea and give away chances like that, you're going to get hurt.
Yeah, and Brighton surging as well.
Yes, I mean, man.
That's the thing about WSL, it's interesting each year is someone emerges from the pack of the kind of like the league sort of middle class and jumps, right? And obviously last year it was United.
Yes.
Had a great win against Leicester. And this year it could be Brighton.
It'll be Brighton.
And it was also Everton for the first half as well. So it's funny to see where Brighton are going to end up in terms of their arc. Because they had a great win, I think 5-0 against Birmingham the weekend.
Hope's a good coach, man. I'm quite pleased that it's happening for Brighton like that because, you know what I mean? I thought that the way it's gone for Hope coming from England and everything what she's done, she's kind of had to go into the darkness a little bit to come back again.
Mm.
And like, it's great to see her with Brighton and Brighton got some good players. Everything what they're doing, it looks right. They look very compact, very solid. So it's going to be interesting to see them when they play against the top to see how it's going to go with the way Hope are coaching now because they do look pretty, convincing.
Yeah, yeah.
In what they're doing. They're very, very well drilled.
Can I say, if we're talking about since we're talking about competition at the top level, quick shout to the Champions League draw that came out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds awful to say, but a little bit of sympathy for Arsenal because it's like now Arsenal are finally like stepping into their form. You know, they had to mm-hmm. rebuild a bit. They're stepping into form and like I love the kind of the early games they've played, but they've got Barcelona.
Yep.
In the Champions League. And that, I mean, maybe that's a great test. Maybe that's a great test to have early on.
Well, Moose, you know what I think is that obviously Barcelona being the champions, Arsenal starting the way they've started, it should be the perfect game for them to say, right, we've started on fire and now we've got Barcelona. So listen, you know what? It's almost like, can you imagine if they go and they do anything against them, beat them, do well, enforce themselves on them, that is only going to give them even more energy for the WSL.
It's
at the
level.
I think, Carl, it's a perfect, for me, they've got to look at it positively. It's the perfect draw for them simply for them to say, right, if we're fucking serious, then this is who we need to be playing and beating them now so that will give us that energy to keep going. It's
if you want to play Barcelona at any point in time in the Champions League, you may as well play them in the group stages.
It's benchmarking, isn't it, Carl? They can work out. I suppose the best thing about this is because they are the best team in the world, you can play them and be like, well, we know what the levels are. Because the one problem with the Champions League last year was people didn't fully have, English clubs didn't fully have a read on just how good this Barcelona were until it was too late. Does that make sense?
Yes,
they didn't get a taste of it. And I think that's what really undid Chelsea because, you know, you had the best wide forwards in world football up against makeshift fullbacks. And that's, you've got to solve that problem. So I think for Arsenal, it'll be a real chance to really evaluate where they are with that.
It's a good draw for them, guys. I go the other way with that. I think that it's one, especially with our manager, Jonas, man looks like he's got pure energy for everything.
Mm.
He's celebrating throw-ins and corners, bro.
Good. You want that to start the season, you know? I want to give a shout out to Mark Thompson at Everyday Mark on Twitter. He's just started a brand new newsletter. Right. On the WSL, and it's really short newsletter. It's like 300 words, just goes around every single result in the WSL, explains who scores, who played well. It's a really good bite-sized chunk for anyone who, you know, I think there's quite a lot of football fans now that I think want to get involved in WSL, which is amazing, but you know, very often you can get caught up in the tangle of other leagues and other games. So I recommend his newsletter. It's just started going out every Monday. So shout out to Mark. You do great work, my friend.
Nice one. Obviously, we'll talk about the Champions League on Stadio and Righty's House. So, you know, you'll get all your vitamins. Moose, they'll get the vitamins from that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And let's give some flowers.
Who are we giving flowers to, Carl? Who are we giving flowers to?
It's not it, man.
First of all, I just finished reading Striking Out the other week. So I want to give flowers to you both for this book. It's incredible. It got me quite heated in two or three segments. There was moments where I was texting Musa going, I can't believe what's going on. This is wild. So I think you two have made an incredible children's book together. And I really enjoyed the article you did in The Observer. So I'm going to give a bouquet of flowers to you both.
for that. I also was going on Instagram the other day and I saw a certain record was being celebrated once again. Talking about Mr. 179. So I want to give some flowers to Uncle Ian as we commemorate a momentous occasion in Premier League history where you became Arsenal's record top scorer.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. Can I just say, because Mayowa wrote a lovely thing on the post, and honestly, the love came in droves. It really does bring you back to a time where, especially when it was happening, it was hedonistic, man. floating on air stuff, like it was just, everything was floaty and amazing. I couldn't believe what was going on, because when I went to Arsenal, I genuinely didn't think I was going to start games. They were flying. Merce, Smith, Campbell, Limpar, they were flying, man. And like I mentioned to somebody the other day, that it's only once I stopped playing, I heard George Graham mention to me, when he was buying the Inright, I wanted to buy the finished article. I never saw myself as a finished article. So to hear him say it, it was a massive shock to me. And it kind of said to me, obviously, once I finished, that he had every intention of me playing.
Mm-hmm.
So to end up breaking the record, it's only when I look back now and you could think, I still can't believe it.
I remember you told me that story about when you first found out you had been signed by Arsenal. Your response wasn't, oh, wow. It was, I think you said, but I got to buy my mum a TV.
But yeah, yeah.
It just didn't register what was going on.
It didn't register because it was the dream. It was the dream because David was there and everything. But I remember I went into training with Crystal Palace like normal. And every day, it might have been Oldham or Aston Villa. I think it was Oldham. I'd have to check. But so on the Monday, we won the game. And on the Monday, I went in and the guy, Peter Prentice, just said to me, listen, the boss wants to see you. So, because I normally got in there like 8:45-ish night, because I like to relax and do stuff, see Betty, Peter Prentice, have a chat with them. Like. So I had to go in and see him. And when I went in there, man was vexed, fucking vexed. It's really weird because I saw him the other day in Scotland. Oh my God, I've got to tell you this quickly, because we went to Scotland the other day to play golf, and Sir Alex was there, Walter Smith was there, Steve Copper was there. And I remember Steve Copper was playing with another group of people. So we was in the lounge and it was me, Alan Shearer, Les Ferdinand, Dean Saunders, and Sir Alex Ferdinand sitting there. And then Steve Copper came past. And this, honestly, Moose, it made me feel like, oh my God, this is amazing, because I love Steve Copper, but Alex Ferguson said, thank fuck you didn't play him in the second game.
Wow.
It was so amazing. He said, fuck it. So Alex Ferguson, and honestly, speak to Al.
Wow.
Alex Ferguson we had a 2 hour, we was with him for about an hour and a half that breakfast. He gave us gold. And he said, we were fucking shitting ourselves that second game. Thinking you're going to start. But like, he gave me that. So when I went into season,
he'd never told you that before.
Never. I've never heard that. He'd never said that before. It was amazing because it was honestly, it made me feel so good inside. But the thing is that Steve Coppell, like I say, he was vexed. And obviously, once it all transpired, I realized he just didn't want me to go. He didn't want to sell me. Didn't want to sell me. But he actually said to me, they've accepted. He didn't say we've accepted. He said, they've accepted a $2.5 million bid from Arsenal. You've got to go and see them. You've got to go and see.
And that was that was a huge amount of money, $2.5 million.
Yeah, it was record signing for them at the time, Moose. And literally, like you say, Carl, the first thing I said was, oh my God, because I remember I had to buy my mum a new telly and I was getting ready to do it after training that day. And I said, and I literally said to him like this, I said, when? I've got to go and buy my mum a new television. And he just totally ignored what I was saying, because I think he might have thought I was joking, but I think I was in shock. I genuinely was in shock, because I never thought, because Palace fans for some reason think that there was some plan going on. This happened literally over a weekend. They knew about my David Rocastle. I used to go and watch Arsenal. David Rocastle used to come watch Palace because he was a Palace supporter. They knew that my link with them like that, but like I never courted a move. It wasn't like in the mix and we were thinking, oh, it's going to happen. It just, bam, it happened. And when you listen to David Dean spoke to to Ron Knowles, and he knew Ron Knowles from the meetings, and he says, listen, it'd be great. What I'll do at some stage, I'll get Mr. Dean to...
you wonder if break it down.
Room. Yes. Shall I see if I could get him? Let me see. Hang on. Let me see if I could get him on the phone, because he loves it. He loves it. Let me see if Mr. Dean's around quickly.
Yeah, try.
Mr. Dean, let me see if he answered the phone. Let me see. Will he answer?
Right.
It was Mr. Dean. Mr. Dean, listen, I'm on my podcast, right, Mr. Dean? Have you got 2 minutes?
Yeah. Go on, for you, I've got 3 minutes.
Okay, so listen, Mr. Dean, I was trying to explain to the guys and everybody on the podcast about how you got Ron Knowles to accept the £2.5 million for the deal. Could you just quickly explain to them how it went?
Right, are we live?
Yes, we are. It's recorded, so you're fine.
Okay, great. So the situation was this. George said he was interested in getting Ian Wright to the club. I happen to know Ron Knowles because I sat on the same league management committee. This would be pre the Premier League. So I rang up Ron, and I knew exactly what type of guy he was. I knew it wasn't going to be easy, the negotiation. So I said, Ron, I'm interested in buying a striker, and we're thinking of Mark Bright. I put him in the picture first because I wanted to cloud it a little bit. Or Ian Wright. He said, oh, no. He said, I need both of them. I said, well, come on, Ron, give me a figure. So he thought about it for a minute. And he said, I don't want to sell either. He said, but wouldn't be less than £2.5 million. So there's a pause. And I said, Ron, I know you're a man of your word. I'm offering you £2.5 million for Ian Wright. And then there's a pause. And he's thinking. And then he says, okay, David, done.
And that was it.
And that was it. I put him on the spot.
Nice one. That's how you do. That's what you do. You put him on the spot. Yeah. But you know what, Mr. Dean? I'm going to be seeing you soon because we need to speak. But like, thank you very much for that. You know how much I love you. You're my father. You're like father to me. You are my father. And I'll speak to you soon.
And you are my son, Ian.
Thank you, Mr. Dean. I love you. I'll speak to you soon.
I love you too.
Bye.
Speak soon.
Bye.
I can't believe that.
So you know what? That's the best way.
So Ian, mm-hmm. In relation to this record, though, it's one thing noticing. I went back and watched your goals, and I noticed mm-hmm. that you are very aware of your numbers, right? Like,
yes,
there's one bit where you score 10 in a row, and you're like, you're well aware. You're counting out to the crowd. Yeah. You're like, you're well into your scoring streaks. Mm-hmm. In relation to this record, which is something you must have begun to dream of at a certain point.
Yeah.
When did you begin to dream of it? And when did you think it was on the cards?
I think
you could actually break it.
I think when Dennis came. When Dennis came, Moose,
okay.
Yep. All of a sudden, it ramped everything up. And you know something? Because you start to get 100. When I got 100 for, scored 100 against Palace, it was the 100th against Palace. Mm-hmm. And when Dennis came, I don't know, I would have been 60 or 70 away. I think I was 120-ish, 108. I don't know what it was. But I know I was in and around that number, between 110, 20 off, I don't know. But when he came, I knew I was going to get more chances. But then all I wanted to do, Moose, was make sure that every game, I'm going to get half a chance, and every game, I'm going to make sure that I'm not missing targets now.
There were a lot of close range finishes towards the end, weren't there? You were really close in. Really close in. Yeah.
Literally.
But your career almost went in an arc. You went, you started close range and you ended close range. Like, you mean, you went on this kind of like hero's journey, right? Where you don't get credit actually for the poaching thing. It's funny because like you get seen as a different kind of striker.
Yeah. Because the different goals, it's all the different goals. But the joy, who was it? I think it was Jim Cannon early doors says the good strikers are not looking to score great goals outside of box stuff. Like, the great strikers are the ones where there's no space, where defenders are around, strikers are in the space to score that goal, where people say things like, oh God, he's got a knack, he's got a nose for it.
Mm.
This is where they started to say, Ian, just stay in there. Honestly, it was fucking, it was like heaven. It's like what I was talking about with Mo Salah. You have got no responsibility apart from scoring. Right. So then you start to get those goals, Musa, where you're in and around, you're following. When the ball's going in the air, in the corner, you're the one who's moving in and around the goalkeeper, or the cross is coming in, you're the one who's moving, just going towards the goal so as you can get that tap in. And those are the ones that I knew that I could nick seven yes. or eight of those a season, apart from all the ones that someone sets me through and you get one or you get the headers and stuff. But those are the ones that I enjoyed because you're stealing them.
Yes. Yes.
Because you know the league by then. It's that.
Exactly.
It's that veteran experience.
The record goal is the easiest goal I've ever scored. And when you watch it, where it builds up from, I think it's from Patrick and Dennis. I can't remember. But then I'm just literally running parallel with everything that's happening on my left side.
And you're slightly back, about 2 feet back from it. And you're watching it all unfold. And there's a collision. And you're just there hanging there.
But then what I'm doing and what I learned to do is just continually move towards the goal and the goalkeeper. Because at some stage, they're going to have to be involved, right?
Yeah.
And so then it goes through. I think Dennis has a shot. And then Patrick slides in with somebody and the ball just bounces out and I'm just there.
Like and a mosquito just looking for
just
flesh.
Literally like a mosquito. I loved those goals because you're sniffing it. You're feeling it. It's in the air. Something's happening here. Bam, bam, bam. Oh, bam, tapping. You know what I mean? And so once I learned those kind of goals and Dennis is giving me more and more chances, you just started to think, bam. And I remember I scored my 150th in a hat trick against Sheffield Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
I think Des Walker got sent off. Mercer's on fire that night. And when I got the 150, Moose, then I knew I was close.
You were
I knew
there.
I was close. Yeah, I was close.
Can we give Can we give a shout out to certain teams that you seem to have particular affection for along the way?
Yeah,
Southampton, yeah, Everton,
man. Oh, man. Yeah, man.
Certain teams. It's almost like Southampton gave you your first lovely memory, so you kept being nice to them. You always gave them a hat trick or two. You always gave them something. What I did notice was the 1-7. I think got like 185 was it in total, right? And then so the record was broken. Almost at the end of your time at Arsenal, right?
Mm.
And the goals, the rate of the goal scoring, you know, it slightly slowed down because you had less time in the team.
Yeah.
So what were those last like couple of months like in terms of the anxiety? Did you ever feel you weren't quite going to get over the line?
No. When the season started, I started on fire.
Yeah.
Scored a nice goal against Leeds, scored a couple against Coventry. I was scoring goals. It was going really well. Then everything happened. Then you break the record. But then, you know, after that, it's like when I got the injury, it slowed down. But like it was done. You know, we were done.
Also, the funny thing with the kind of and the weird thing about football, of course, is you have the passing of the torch, right? So as you're approaching the record, you start seeing obviously Anelka appear in certain
Anelka,
games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then of course, like Anelka makes way, and Henri comes in. It's almost like it's so weird. It's like watching these Marvel movies where like Captain America's getting old.
Yes.
But then someone else is getting the shield.
Yeah.
So you get to see it happen in real time almost.
I did, Moose, and you could feel it. But I remember we was in the cup final and I'm thinking, okay, every single goal now, every goal I score is it's history.
Yeah.
It's no one's done this before. No one's been in this territory. So, you know what I mean? The 79 and then the 80. Then in the end, it was 85. But all I was thinking was every single goal I score now is a history-making goal. It's a really strange feeling because normally you score goals and you're just scoring a goal. But now because you're the highest goal scorer in the history of the club, every goal you score is like the golden, it's a golden goal. It's a golden ticket until Thierry comes along and goes past it. Then every goal that Thierry scores, it's golden. It's a history-making goal.
I really enjoyed the reception you gave to Thierry Henry.
Yeah, it was genuine.
When he matched it. It was... Mm. I remember watching the YouTube video and that, you know, there's a little moment where you talk to each other and there's just this great moment of embrace and you've got this little smile on your face and it's almost as if you said, the city's yours now.
Well, you know what I did actually say, Carl, because we've done it. And I said, Thierry, this is amazing. You're amazing. I said, Thierry, one thing you do not want is somebody else doing this to you. I said to him, put it out of sight.
Wow, that's amazing. That's
put it out of sight. And what was good about because I genuinely believed that 179 goals for a club of Arsenal's stature was not enough, even when I got there. You know what I mean? what I would have done for another 3-4 years to try and put it up there. Arsenal's goal scoring record should be where Thierry's put it now, 228 or something. You're looking at Liverpool's, it's 300. Dixie Dean's 300 and odd. Arsenal's of the caliber where it should be up there. 179 was not enough. You understand what I'm saying?
I completely get it. Yeah.
It's not enough. And so I said to him, put it out of sight. You know what I mean? Because this, it's got to be something where somebody comes and they have to be genuinely unbelievable to break this again.
Right, right.
Thierry, with his capabilities, his ability and what he's capable of, he breaks 185 once. And I could feel, and the thing about it, you say, when did I realize it was coming? When Thierry got to his hundreds, 110s and that, the only thing that could have stopped that record from being broken was if Arsenal sold him, and that wasn't going to happen. Mm. I knew Thierry Henry is breaking that record.
Yeah.
I phoned him after the game. There was a brawl, and I called him after the game. I said, congratulations, Thierry. He said, thank you, legend. He said, thank you. You made me come to this club. You know what that quote, what he said? I fell in love with this club because of Ian Wright. I can't ever forget that. I remember people were going on to me about like Thierry, and Thierry's this and that. And I remember early days in Twitter, you know, I used to have to send them that quote. What's at Arsenal? I joined this, I love this club because of Ian Wright. Bam, Thierry Henry. Now our record goal scorer.
Well, I want to talk about love actually, because, you know, that's my main interest.
It's all about love.
It is. And I look at this and watching your goals. It's funny because you have this iconic celebration people talk about, but actually a lot of your celebrations are just pure euphoria connected with the crowd. And, you know, you're someone that lived it. And I think it's weird. Your relationship with your support and the crowd is maybe almost like a turning point. You kind of straddled the pre-Premier League era, right?
Mm.
And the Premier League. And you were part of this incredible transition, but not only were you part of it, you were like a central figure, right? What was it like to be part of the birth of, you know, for better or worse, because I know Arsenal have struggled in recent games, but let's talk about the fact that, like, what was it like to be there at the birth of the Wenger era, to know that you had a huge role in the transition towards it? How does that feel looking back in terms of a legacy? Because to me, that goes beyond the goals or stature or anything else.
I'm very proud that I was able to straddle him, because you know how forward thinking that Arsene Wenger was. So to have me as a striker, and Arsene Wenger used to say things like, he doesn't understand how, with the way I came into the game, that I played a game like I do, and the intelligence that I had in the box when I didn't have that schooling or that academy kind of schooling to be playing football like that. And the way I played football, he wanted me to continue to play like that. But when you say, how do I feel? I feel very pleased, very pleased. I feel honoured to have been able to, because when I got to Arsenal, I scored 29 goals in that 92 season, which doesn't count in the Premier League.
Right.
You know what I mean? Which I'm still very proud of. That's where my golden boot came from. It was the year of when the Premier League came. I think Teddy got it in the end. But to be able to go from that era into that one, my first Premier League goal was against Liverpool. I was so pleased about that. Away from home, and you know, just kick on scoring, still doing my stuff at, because people don't realize I got to Arsenal when I was 28.
Right, it's wild. It's
28 when I got to Arsenal, my 28th birthday, and so I was always in a rush to try and score. That's why I could not do enough on the training ground to be as good as I was as a goal scorer. I needed to continuously do it, because I remember when I tell you guys, when I spoke to Chris Waddle at that PFA dinner, when I was a second division player for Palace, and he was saying, you've got everything apart from upstairs. You need to focus, you know, with the anger and all the stuff. You need to calm that down and focus on taking half chances in training. Don't take liberties in training just because you're in the second division. Because when you come to the first division, and you will, because he said, I watch you. I've watched you a few times. And he says, don't take liberties. You won't get that time in the first division. And I went back to training, Moose, and I've done exactly that. I remember when I went to England, watching them guys, watching the defenders, how good the defenders were in training at England. All the time I came back from England, always done well on the Saturday, because your game goes up. And I stayed at those levels, Moose, Carl. I stayed at those levels because I know this is what it takes, and this is where I have to be every week to compete in this league. That's what it came down to. So I had different boosts along the way. Then Shearer came along. Then Owen came along. Ferdinand, Cole, this one. So you're constantly saying, gee, I've got to stay here. And being in England and being amongst them, you can watch them at close quarters, watching them train, watching what they do, watching how they put it in, watching Shearer, watching Sheringham, watching Ferdinand, Cole, Fowler, Owen, all of the guys, watching how they are in training. I thought, yeah, okay. And remember, I'm older. I'm older than all of them.
I want to say this, actually. One thing I want to say, because I haven't thought about it like this way before. Marco van Basten, the Swan, one of my favorite strikers of all time. Marco van Basten, and this is, I think, the biggest compliment I can give you. Marco van Basten was done by 27, 28, right? Yeah. He was done. He did everything in football and was done by 27, 28.
Wow.
And as you were an elite striker before that, but in terms of the visibility, the platform that you had, you didn't get a platform till the year after he retired. Around the same time that he was retiring, you were kind of just like getting into your own, right? And that's the wild thing. It's like, you are probably the only elite striker of your generation that ever played under that time pressure. You're the only elite striker who ever played as a race against time. And you still did it. That is absolutely incredible to have done that, because you didn't play with 15, 20 years ahead of you. You played as if
it was gonna
you weren't going to get another start. And you did it. That to me is the greatest compliment I think I can give you. You did that every week for years.
I really appreciate that, Moose, because there was times I used to be thinking, I wish I could have had a few more years.
Right.
I really, really do wish I could have had a few more years. I always felt like that, especially with missing out on all the tournaments where I believed that I was good enough to be at those tournaments. Missing out on those tournaments and, you know, ending up getting to play against Cannavaros and the best in the world and testing them and doing well, but knowing that I was always running out of time.
Yeah. I think what's really beautiful was, you didn't know George Graham saw you as the finished article. You were 28 years of age and you didn't know George Graham thought you were the finished article. And yet you worked tirelessly for years to match that hidden expectation someone had of you. And it never fazed you. It never got you flustered. Mm-hmm. And once you hit that point, 120, 120 goals, you went, I am. I will be. Let me create a brand new finished article for the next generation. And then when that next generation came, you were magnanimous enough to go, you know what? Create something even greater. And there is a beauty in the iterations of Arsenal that you helped build. Arsenal isn't Arsenal without the work you did. And I think when you compare the shock when you found out you had that deal when you were going to Arsenal to where you came to when you broke that record, those are two very different Arsenals.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you've helped bridge a really important gap in that football club's lineage. And I think that's why Arsenal fans still hold you so dearly. And I think that's why a lot of football fans hold you dearly, even if you did put several hat tricks past their own club.
Exactly. you're like Pep. Oh, I love it here.
I love it here. I'm coming. I'm coming to destroy you. I'm going to clean my feet. I'm going to Thanos you.
Played as if you were hungry and yet you put on a banquet for other people.
That's all. Guys, I'm going to see you soon.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Thanks,
absolutely.
Guys. Thank you, man. You made me bask.
Good vibes.
I can't thank you enough for being on here. Absolutely. Made me feel good. I'll speak to you soon.
Absolutely, man. God bless. Forward to it.
God bless. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you very much, Carl. Thank you very much, Musa. I love you guys. We'll do it again next week. Until that time, stay safe. I genuinely mean that. Stay safe. And then we'll do this again because we'll be back. God bless.